See council are ready for the next case, 13CA0970, Canterbury versus Lamar Advertising.
To please the court, Ronald Fano, registration number 20797, on behalf of the appellant, the Canterbury Company. This case is about the exercise of termination clause found in a license agreement for a billboard on Canterbury's property. The appeal concerns the trial court's construction of that termination clause and its application of the undisputed facts to it. The standard, therefore, the applicable standard of review for all issues today is de novo. We maintain that there are two categories of errors, really, that the trial court committed. First of all, the manner in which it reached the conclusion that significant diminution in value as required under the clause existed, and then in construing the termination clause in a way that failed to give effect to key language, language that required the significant diminution occur to a specific aspect of the billboard location, that being the value for advertising purposes. Start with significant diminution in value because under the clause, without it, there can be no valid termination, and this is the case regardless of whether or even how the value for advertising purpose piece is applied or defined. Now, the clause reads, as the court is aware, that the licensee can terminate the value of the location for advertising purposes shall be significantly diminished. The court determined that you have significant diminution in value if the party's mutual expectations about the value of the billboard location as a place to sell advertising space proves inaccurate to a significant degree. That's the court's test. Now, it's a revenue-based analysis that we believe is wrong, and I'll get to that in a moment. But regardless, the court adopted this test, and then it misapplied it, because it ignored the only evidence that was presented as to what the mutual expectations of the parties were regarding this location. That evidence was that in 2004, when Lamar purchased the billboard, it was revealed to Lamar the level of sales that had occurred, the level of revenue from advertising sales that had occurred at this location in the years prior. It was revealed to Lamar what the license fee was that had been paid, and that was to be paid. This evidence showed that what had occurred prior to Lamar's purchase is that this billboard location produced revenues such that the license fee that was being paid took up anywhere from 41 to 52% of that revenue. That's the mutual expectation. At the time of the termination in 2012, the undisputed evidence was that the license fee that had been paid for the 6 months of 2012 was only taking up 37% of the revenue that had been produced. So indeed, the undisputed evidence established that this location was exceeding the only evidence of the party's mutual expectations. As I said, the court apparently ignored this evidence and apparently relied on Lamar's testimony regarding its internal corporate expectations, which were that they'd like their billboard locations to achieve a 25% license fee to revenue ratio. But there's no evidence whatsoever that was presented that this was a mutual expectation of the parties. It was, just like I said, it was an internal expectation. And it was an expectation that certainly did not make its way into the record, into the contract.
I'm a little confused. I see that the judge did use the term mutual expectation of the parties, but the license agreement says if the licensee wants to terminate for any reason, may cancel this notice for any reason. It doesn't say anything about the licensor's intentions in that particular paragraph. I'm not sure how the court got to the mutual expectations of the parties.
The court did not explain how it arrived at the mutual expectation test, but that is
indeed, what he tried to apply. Okay.
That is indeed the test that was applied.
It's a de novo review here, so we can go with that or we can disregard that.
Absolutely correct. And I believe that if we don't want to apply that test, the mutual expectation test, we can proceed to look at the license agreement and the termination clause and apply the plain meaning and see that the court still made an error based on how it applied the undisputed facts.
And would you walk me through that analysis then?
The clause says shall be significantly diminished in value. Value, though, for advertising purposes. So we need to determine what the value of the billboard location was for a very specific purpose, for advertising purposes. And then we need to determine what that value was at the commencement of the license agreement and what that value was on the date of termination. Interestingly, what we have here is a license agreement that went into effect on May 1st, 2012. It was terminated 15 days later. That license agreement with the termination clause that's at issue says specifically, it's a separate agreement, it supersedes all others, it takes effect upon the termination of the first license agreement. So we gotta look at the value difference under the plain language of the termination clause within that 15-day period.
Well, didn't the court make a finding, and I understand it wasn't the 15-day period, but it was a couple months earlier, that Lamar was unable to sell any advertising on the north-facing side of the billboard? It seems like that finding supports some sort of diminution in value.
The court certainly did make that finding, and it's absolutely true. It's based on the evidence that on one face, there were no advertising sales on that billboard for the first 3 months of 2012. Yet despite that, for the six-month period of 2012, January 1 through the day of termination, June 30, the billboard produced revenue of $30,000, which for a six-month period exceeded the entire revenue that was generated for the year of 2011. So, and that really goes to the point of giving meaning to value for advertising purposes. Because why was the billboard able to do that? And actually, I'd like to take a step back in the evidence. If you look at 2008, the evidence presented was that in 2008, neither face of this billboard produced any revenue for the first 3 months. And yet in 2008, that billboard went on to have the third highest year of revenue ever. Why was that possible? Because the value for advertising purposes hadn't been diminished. What does value for advertising purposes mean? We have to ask ourselves that. We can turn to the evidence that Lamar's witnesses presented, which was in complete agreement with our witnesses. Value of a billboard location is premised, absolutely premised, on its appeal to advertisers. That's Lamar's testimony, our testimony. So you look at that, value equals appeal to advertisers. Also undisputed is the fact that appeal to advertisers is based on certain specific factors, factors extrinsic and intrinsic to the location.
Now hold it, what you're getting at, I guess, is you're ignoring, or you don't want us to pay attention to the fact that as of April or May of 2012, the licensing fee would have gone up to $28,800, which would have pretty much offset a lot of that $30,000 revenue that they had in that year. There's two sides to the equation. There's, are you getting revenues, but if the cost of getting the revenues is so high that it's not profitable, is that not substantial diminution for advertising purposes?
I absolutely am not avoiding that piece. The number, the license fee number, the 28.8, that went into effect May 1st of 2012. That's the first point. The second point is that when we're looking at value for advertising purposes, and as I was saying, the testimony of the witnesses on both sides is that you look at appeal to advertisers, you don't look at factors such as the rent cost. It doesn't play into the value for advertising purposes because the value is based on appeal to advertisers. Appeal to advertisers is based on the stipulated, undisputed value factors that have nothing to do with the rent. And there's no evidence presented that an increase in rent made it more difficult for Lamar to sell to advertisers.
Okay, so what is the basis for your assertion that the value for advertising purposes depends on the perspective of the advertisers? It doesn't take, I mean, the advertiser is Lamar. You're not talking about the clients who hire, I don't know, they do rent Lamar's billboard. They'll put their names up there. You're talking about Lamar, right?
No, I respectfully...
Yeah, I misunderstand you, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree. Value for advertising, if we were looking at the value of this location from Lamar's perspective, mm-hmm. we wouldn't need the qualifying language in the clause for advertising purposes. You could say the value of the location is significantly diminished, or the value for Lamar's purpose. We heard from Lamar's general manager that Lamar values a location based on four factors. One of the factors is advertising sales. The other three factors are things internal to Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
The license fee,
mm-hmm.
the administrative costs, the corporate margin expectations. Value for advertising purposes, as was established, is based on appeal to advertisers and these factors that make a billboard location appealing to
advertisers. Some kind of objective standard. It doesn't matter what Lamar thinks, it matters what the value of the location was, generally for advertising. That's what you're saying, for advertising.
From the advertiser's perspective, yes.
Any advertiser, not this particular one.
Yeah, because if you look at the dictionary definitions of advertising and purpose, advertising is to announce to the public. Purpose is to achieve an object or end. Whose purpose is it to announce to the public who wants to achieve that object or end? It's the advertisers. They're trying to achieve that end. So they look at a location and say, I want to put my ad there because of these factors, because of how many people go past it, how close it is to the roadway, how high is it.
Let me ask you this question. It's a hypothetical. What if there was some fancy technology that made billboard signs basically obsolete so that all signs would lose their value for advertising purposes? How would that fit in with this termination clause? Let's say you have drones with banners, that's the trend in advertising. And so now no one wants a standalone sign because they can have this cool thing that flies around. So how would that impact, how would the termination clause then play with that scenario?
Well, you would have to, under our theory, you would have to fit that into the impact that is required under the clause. The significant diminution would have to be on the appeal to advertisers for some reason. One of the factors that we talked about and that the court relied on a case, the Bristol case, talked about things that detract from the viewing of the billboard. Under the hypothetical, these drones and these banners could conceivably fall within one of those factors. It detracts from the viewing of the billboard, so advertisers don't like it and don't buy it.
I know you're almost out of time. Let me ask you just a real quick question, hopefully just a yes or no. I see from the record that your client drafted the agreement. So I take it I want to clarify that it's your position that this is, that the termination clause is unambiguous. Is that correct?
Yes, that's in our position all along. And I would like to reserve my remaining 2:29 if possible.
I would like to ask a question. The contract, that term defines, has a phrase, sign structure. Sign structure is a defined term.
Correct.
Premises is capitalized. It's a defined term. And premises means the land where this thing was placed. The word we're trying to deal with here, although we haven't talked about it yet, is location. What does location mean? And what I want to know is, does location mean something different than the premises? Under contract construction, you would think it would have to, right? But isn't your argument based on the fact that nothing happened to the premises, therefore nothing happened to the location? I tell you, that would be too complicated a question to answer in 1 minute, but we can try.
But I think location and premises are two different things. I think when you're talking about location, you're talking about the billboard structure and where it sits on the premises.
Well, then what is sign structure? How is that different from the sign structure language then?
I think sign structure and premises combine to make location. The location of the billboard is the sign, the billboard is the structure, the premises is where it sits. I believe that, and it's not a defined term, but that is when we're talking about location, we are talking about the sign structure on the premises and where it sits.
Okay. I won't belabor it with you.
If I could reserve my last minute.
You have about a minute, but we may be inclined to give you an extra minute since Judge Richmond had kind of a lengthy question.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Richard Conker, attorney number 2695, which, given the other attorney numbers that have been here before you today, makes me feel older than I should.
Excuse me. The case, as everybody recognizes, revolves around the interpretation and application of the termination clause in the billboard license agreement, allowing the license agreement to be terminated if the value of said location for advertising purposes shall be significantly diminished for any reason. And this case could have been voided. It never happened. If the person who wrote the agreement, the plaintiff in this case, or the owner of the plaintiff companies, had simply written that it could be terminated if the value of said location for advertisers' purposes was significantly diminished. But he did not. He did not, I would suggest, it's at least conceivable, because at the time he wrote this agreement, he was the billboard owner. He wasn't the landowner. He was the billboard owner. He knew that billboards were in the advertising business. He had been in it for a long time. He did not become the landowner until a couple of years later when he bought the land from the person that he had originally entered into the license agreement with. Having bought the property, he then turned around and entered with himself a new license agreement, which doubled the rent. That was to take effect at the conclusion of the first license agreement, because they were still going to have to pay the prior landowner under the first license agreement as part of the purchase of the land. He did not make that change. He did not specify that what he was concerned about in the lease was that it would be a concern about the visibility of the sign, the distraction of other outside influences that would diminish the usefulness of the sign to the advertisers. He was preserving the right to terminate the lease for if it significantly diminished value for advertising purposes, and clearly his business was an advertising business. His business was United Advertising Company. Lamar's business is Lamar Advertising. The purpose was, and the trial court found that it was, to benefit the original signer. The clause was interpreted by the trial court, as it had to be, against the plaintiff. The court could not weigh the testimony of the plaintiff as to what his thinking was with respect to what advertising purposes meant, that this was a 10-part test, and that you considered the whether or not the sign had been moved, or the road had been moved, or it had turned into a one-way street the wrong direction, or any of those kinds of things. That could not be considered because the Colorado Supreme Court has said that an agreement cannot be varied by the plaintiff's own testimony as to his intent. There was no other evidence as to the intent of the parties, because the original landowner, who had been the one who entered into the first agreement, didn't testify. Lamar couldn't testify because it wasn't involved in the discussion and negotiation and execution of that agreement. So they the court was left with having to look at what do the words in this provision that Mr. Giordano wrote mean.
Do you agree that it's the mutual expectation of the parties?
Pardon?
Counsel for Canterbury argued that the court properly determined that it had to look at the mutual expectation of the parties, and that the mutual expectation of the parties, he says, based on testimony, gave a definition to advertising purposes.
Well, with all due respect, a trial court, like a student in a final examination, can get an A, but still miss one part. And the mutual expectations language, which the trial court did comment, is not in
the license agreement. There's nothing in the license agreement that says that it has to advertise, the value of the location for advertising purposes has to be significantly diminished according to the mutual expectations of the parties. It could have been written in. It could have been put there by Mr. Giordano. It wasn't. And indeed, one might suggest that from the billboard owner's standpoint, the desire is that he be allowed or she be allowed to make the decision based on what proves to be the case. With respect to the mutual expectations, because of the fact that that was not something that was written into the lease, there was frankly no testimony as to mutual expectations that were involved. Now, Mr. Fano says that you can infer that the only evidence of mutual expectations came from the fact that during the 2 years that Mr. Giordano owned the billboard, the rent was 41% to 52% of the revenues, and therefore that was the mutual expectations. The problem with that is, first of all, there's no evidence that was discussed by Mr. Giordano with Lamar or vice versa. But secondly, there's no indication that Mr. Giordano viewed 41 to 52% rent ratio as being a going concern. The testimony that was provided by Lamar was that their internal estimate was that they wanted 25% as the top level of rent payment to the revenues, and that that percentage was consistent throughout the industry. Mr. Giordano, who's been in the industry for a long time and owns or is a major player in billboard companies on both coasts, and in Denver at that time, did not refute that testimony. He did not come forward and say, oh no, 52% rent is just fine, particularly 52% of the lower amount of rent.
Mr. Hall, excuse me, I guess what's bothering me is that you're giving the termination clause a fairly broad interpretation, and it does have for any reason. But it seems like your interpretation sort of boils down to, if the advertising becomes unprofitable for any reason, then it fits the criteria. Is that true or no?
I think that is true. The clause is not limited.
So
it says significantly diminished. Now, I'm not saying that if it turned out to be unprofitable by 1% or 2%, that would make a difference. But keep in mind that the evidence showed in this case that even under the old rent levels, for two of the years, the rent exceeded the revenues. I mean, this wasn't just a little bit unprofitable. They were losing money on this just to pay the rent, leaving aside all the other expenses that the business had.
Okay, I guess that gets to the second thing that's bothering me. I actually had two things. The second thing is, when you look at the surrounding clauses, which I understand that that they're not relying on, but the sign structure shall be entirely or partially obscured, the premises shall be unsafe for the maintenance of the structures, it seems like those two other nearby clauses have to do with the actual premises, whereas you're saying that the last one doesn't really need to be tied to the location as such, but it could just be unprofitable for any reason and the location diminishes in value.
Well, it does have to be tied to the location. I mean, it clearly is the value of said location. Now, unlike what Mr. Giordano argues, it doesn't have to be only this location.
Right. Mm-hmm. So
as long as the impact is on this location.
Right. So if the drones with the banners became the vogue and no one really wanted to rent a sign anymore, or they wanted it at rock bottom mm-hmm. prices, it would affect this location and perhaps all others. And you're saying that that's sufficient to satisfy that clause C?
For licensors and licensees, for lessors and lessees that enter into this agreement, the answer is yes. Now, not all people do enter into this agreement. But to the extent that that's what this agreement provides, and to the extent that that's what Mr. Giordano said when he wrote it, and he didn't limit it, then yes, he has to bear the consequences of the decisions he made with respect to putting this clause in.
So, Mr. Helm, I understand your argument with regard to the value of said location shall be significantly diminished for any reason. But that would seem to write out for advertising purposes. How does that factor into the analysis?
Well, it's conceivable that the value of the location, if you're not considering advertising purposes, would look more to the premises, as Judge Richmond was referring. Say that the building that was on the location deteriorated badly, and it's, you know, I mean, there was an earthquake and it started falling apart, and that was that kind of a thing. That might be a value of the location. If it's divorced from advertising purposes, that breadth would suggest that sort of anything that went wrong, they refused to cut down the weeds or whatever, might have triggered this clause. But that's not as broad as this. I mean, that's much broader than what this clause is, which is it does have to relate to advertising purposes, which means the advertisers or the advertising company, the billboard company that puts up the advertisements. So it is, you do have to look at the advertising feature of it, not whether or not it lost location is a good place to have a warehouse or whatever.
So in your view, does this clause kind of roughly equate to the doctrine of commercial frustration? I'm not sure Colorado really looks at that doctrine. I know some jurisdictions do. It's sort of like impossibility is kind of a defense to breaching a contract. Then there's commercial frustration, which if the idea is that it was supposed to be commercially valuable, and then if for some reason that purpose gets frustrated, some jurisdictions sort of consider that an opportunity for breach.
I don't want to hold myself out as an expert on commercial frustration, but it sounds like it's at least a cousin of that, if not closer. You know, you do have it limited to what this, I mean, yes, it's frustrating the business of the advertising that's going on there. And indeed, I think the evidence was clear that had happened and was going to happen. Indeed, the evidence showed that with the increased rent, it was clear to Lamar that they were going to lose money every year. Not necessarily because the rent itself would eat up all the revenues, but because the rent and the other given expenses would eat up all the revenues and would leave them in a lost position in terms of profitability. To require that they then have to wait and suffer 10 years of hemorrhaging before they can then say, oh, well, geez, this was significant diminution, was something that the judge found not necessary. One of the features that the judge did deal with of this kind of clause is that when you have a clause that is exercisable by one party to a contract, then clearly Colorado law is that you imply a good faith test to determine whether or not the actions of the party with the power meets the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. And in this particular case, of course, the trial court examines specifically that issue, concluding for four different reasons that the actions of Lamar were taken in good faith. They were not taken in bad faith, and therefore it was acceptable to give them the authority to exercise this particular clause. And so from that standpoint, I think that ends up getting covered and to some extent may cast a gloss on your commercial
commercial frustration. For example, if the company were being poorly run and causing it to be unprofitable, it probably wouldn't have anything to do with the location.
That may very well be, but in any event, on top of your commercial frustration, you also then face this issue of the implied covenant of good faith and fair dealing. So it's not just, well, I decided I didn't like it, so I'm going to leave you. Unless the client.
I have a question.
Yes.
You say location is unambiguous, right? It's not an ambiguous term?
Well, I think location for advertising purposes
is unambiguous. Okay. What does it mean?
Well, I think it means the place where the billboard is, where the advertising device is.
How is that different from the premises?
Which is, well, the premises are the entire area on which this sign is located.
So the location is just the place where the pole touches the ground?
the pole and the overhanging sign, yes.
If this said the value of the billboard, then there also would be no argument here.
No, there would be plenty of argument because then the argument would be, well, wait a minute, all we're supposed to focus on is just the billboard, and there was nothing changed about the billboard. It still had the same number of feet, it still had the same faces, it still had the same lights, and therefore the value of the billboard hadn't changed. I would argue clearly to the contrary, but we would not have avoided the argument.
Okay, you're willing to read, Mr. Holm, but it's because of Judge Richmond, so thank you very much.
I take the blame for both of you.
Thank you so much.
And Bailiff, if we could add a total of 2 minutes on for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of quick points that I want to address from what Mr. Holm stated. Number one, he stated when talking about mutual expectations that the numbers were not disclosed. The evidence is to the contrary. Page 50 of the transcript, lines 11 through 14, where Mr. Giordano testified that as part of the transaction with Lamar, these revenue numbers were indeed conveyed to Lamar. That was not disputed. Secondly, Mr. Holm, in talking about the performance of this billboard, said that there were 2 years, and I assume he's referencing 2009 and 2011, where the billboard operated at a loss, that the revenues were less than the license fee. Incorrect as well. The court's order, page 7 of the court's order, has the evidence summarized. 2009 revenue was $25,469, license fee $19,200. 2011, $27,900 in revenue, $19,200 in license fee.
But if you take their internal costs into account, it may have been a loser. I think that's maybe what you're saying. I'm not going to speak. Just for that.
The what I'd like to do just for the remaining time that I have is where I started, which is set aside the meaning of value for advertising purposes and look at significant diminution in value. Based on how I think Lamar wants to look at it, and maybe the court wanted to look at it, pure revenue-based analysis. We think that's incorrect, but we can live with that. Because, as I said, the numbers, the only relevant numbers are 2012, and you had an increase in revenue. You had $30,000 in revenue, which was higher than 2011, the entire year, higher than 2009. We also didn't touch on the fact that Lamar's lease manager told us what Lamar thinks is significant diminution in value, or at least a flag of significant diminution in value. That's when, to them, the license fee is eating up 50% or more of the revenue over a period of a few years. Then you consider significant diminution in value. Lamar's lease manager, his testimony. None of the facts, none of the evidence shows that this existed in 2011. None of the facts show that it existed anywhere in the history of this billboard except for 2009, except for 2011. Now, Judge Richmond asked a question about, well, what about the increase in license fee? We don't think that that increase is significant in the determination, but if we look at it, the license fee would be $28,800 a year for the 50% flag. That would require revenue of $57,600 or more to exceed, to be out of Lamar's 50% test. Every single year, you apply that 28.8. You apply it every single year, with the exception of 2009 and 2011, you exceed the 50%. 2010, you're slightly below it. 2012, of course, you're still way above it.
Okay, so, Mr. Pano, your time has expired.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your arguments. Thanks to both counsel for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted and an opinion will issue in due course.